Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family, finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. And now, here's Mary Donnellan on Mom Talk Radio.
Welcome to this spectacular, love-filled edition of Mom Talk Radio. This is Mary Donnellan in for Maria Bailey. And welcome to February, the month of love, hearts, flowers, everything fun, and Valentine's Day, which is coming up in a week. So don't forget your sweetheart, your kids, your spouse, your teachers. I think they do a great job and they deserve a lot of heart-shaped boxes of chocolate. And those are my favorite. And I don't know where January went. I don't know about you, but I just couldn't believe that the calendar turned over another month. And this is also a leap year. So we're going to have one more day in February. I just think that's the coolest thing. And actually, a friend of mine was born on February 29th. And she loves it because every few years, now that we're getting older, she's only, 12, she says, because she celebrates every fourth year, which is just fantastic, I think. And in the spirit of hearts and love, February is also National Heart Month, and it's particularly important for women to pay attention to their heart health. Mom Talk Radio is not associated with American Heart Association. It's just one of those things that I feel passionately about. My good friend is a huge participant in the Go Red for Women campaign. So go to that site, goredforwomen.org, and check it out. You will be surprised at all the fabulous information there. There's recipes, heart healthy recipes, etc. But women in particular, actually heart disease is the number one killer of women, which I was shocked. I would have thought it was cancer, frankly, or something else, but it's not. It's heart disease. So make sure in this month of hearts and love and flowers of February that you do take care of your health and start to pay attention, because it also isn't just it doesn't just affect older women. It's all ages and all races and everyone. So it does not discriminate. And when we also talk about February, I am in the midst of Girl Scout cookie sales. And I think I talked about it the last time I hosted for Maria. So I wanted to just relay very quickly that if you know of a Girl Scout brownie or daisy in your area, you see one of them selling outside a store, go ahead and buy a box. And if you can't eat them, then donate to the military. There's a great program they run called Cookies for the Military, CFM. And last Sunday, my daughter and I and four other little brownies had done a booth at a local big box hardware store. And this older gentleman walked out of the store. And he walked by the booth, and one of the little girls, more of the shyer girl in the group, was standing with her little sign, and she said, "Would you like to buy some Girl Scout cookies?" And the older gentleman just kept walking. And to me, that drives me crazy. Like, just say no. They can take it. We've coached them to be able to take a no. So she had the best line. She just looked, and she kept saying it to everybody that walked by. She'd say, "That's okay. Have a good day anyway." And she said, "But you could donate to the military." And he turned around on a dime and he looked back at the girls and he looked at me and he said, "That's not fair. These are the cutest little girls I've ever seen." And he walked back to the table. And of course, the girls were on him like a piranha, because anybody that came to the table was going to buy cookies. So here's these little girls running up to this old guy. And he says, "I was a Korean War veteran and I would love to donate." So he takes his wallet out. He can't eat them, he says. He says, "My wife and my doctor would not be happy. I have diabetes." So he takes out his wallet, and we're thinking he's going to throw a dollar in there, which is what everybody did. Or they buy a box and then they put the extra, it was $4. They'd put the extra dollar from the $5 bill in the box, and he pulls out $20, and you should have seen their faces. It was just precious. So, again, cookies for the military. We ended up sending just from that 1 4-hour booth at the hardware store, about 2 cases. They're going to be shipped directly overseas by the Girl Scout Council. So, with that's my plug for the Cookies for the Military and Girl Scout cookies, and I've got to get rid of them out of my freezer because I love the Samoas. So we have a great show lined up. We are going to be talking about managing screen time with a developer of an app called Screen. We're going to be talking about an author and the leader, an author who has written a couple of books and is leading a fight against human trafficking. And we're going to be talking to the author of a book called Unpregnant Pause, which sounds really hilarious. And our first guest is Julia Aziz. She's going to be talking about her book called Lessons of Labor. And don't we all have lessons about that? And we will welcome Julia Aziz when we come right back after this short break.
Mom's Little Secret. Mom Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Mom Talk Radio. This is Mary in for Maria. And before we welcome our first guest, I would like to thank Premama at drinkpremama.com. You can find information about this prenatal vitamin that is a drinkable prenatal. It's a powder form, and you put it in your smoothie, your juice, etc. And they are sponsoring Mom Talk Radio today. So we always love to give a shout out to our sponsors. And interestingly enough, one of the founders of Premama is named Dan Aziz, but is in no relation to our first guest, Julia Aziz. I just think that's a great coincidence. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Julia.
Thank you, Mary.
So, Julia, you have written a book called Lessons of Labor, One Woman's Self-Discovery Through Birth and Motherhood. We all hear horror stories about labor, but you wrote a book about it. Tell us why you wrote the book. What was your inspiration?
My inspiration really was my first experience with childbirth, and realizing that whereas I had been told a lot about kind of the physical nature of birth and maybe pain management in that way, I hadn't realized the mental and emotional and sort of spiritual struggle of giving birth. And so I was really blown away by that and saw it as a metaphor for some of those same challenges I'd felt in the rest of my life. So I wrote it to kind of, and also in becoming a new mom, there were so many challenges, especially after that first baby was born. And I could really see how, you know, what I was struggling with in the pain and uncertainty of childbirth was so similar to the struggles I had in regular life. So it's my story, but it's also, I'd say, sort of a process for how to maybe look at our life stories or our birth stories as tools for learning.
Right. And you actually have background. You're a licensed clinical social worker and a hospice spiritual counselor as well. So do you think it gave you that different perspective or an edge over, let's say, me, who doesn't have that background in spiritual counseling?
I mean, I'd say that that's generally the way I look at life in general. And yeah, from my training and what brought me into doing that kind of work in the first place. I feel like I'm a student of life, and that was one of the most intense kind of human experiences. So it felt monumental in that way. I think it's really a rite of passage for women who go through that. And so I wanted to kind of explore that in that way instead of just, you know, did the birth go the way I wanted it to go? Did, you know, my newborn experience, did that go the way? You know, I think a lot of times we focus on, did you have a good birth experience? Did you have a bad one? You know, did your baby sleep or not sleep? Instead of, whoa, like, how am I handling this and what could I learn from that?
Right. So, is it your birth story? Is it tips for moms? Is it more of just what happened to you or what moms get? Like you said, is it something about what's the genre of the book, I guess?
Yeah, it's more of a memoir/self-help, I would say. It's split into four sections. I have three children, and I also had a miscarriage my very first pregnancy. So each section is for a different birth or that miscarriage, and there are short chapters in each section, and at the beginning of each is an excerpt from that birth story. So kind of along, going through a whole section, I'm slowly telling the story of that labor, and then I will introduce sort of a lesson that, like a life lesson from that experience, and then connect that to usually kind of what's going on as a new mom for me. So it's kind of there's two storylines going on, like the birth storyline and then just kind of the new mom stories. So it's my experience, but it's also kind of just a process of reflection.
Right. Well, that sounds great, because actually when you look at the big picture, obviously the new mom and obviously motherhood goes on. The birth part is really just the blip on the radar, on the timeline, you know? So the postnatal is where you really need the support and the help. So this sounds great.
Definitely. Yeah. And that was a big reason why I wrote it, was that I think, especially for a first time pregnant woman, there's so much focus on childbirth, you know, and it's like, and then you'll have the baby and you don't realize what a huge, huge change that's going to be and how much, how much goes on in that, you know, year or 2 years or however many, you know, it takes. It's a big adjustment.
I just remember the first few weeks just being like gobsmacked. What am I doing?
Yeah,
how do they sent me home with this thing, you know?
Right, so right. Whereas the labor can't last more than a few days. So
right.
That just keeps going
right.
on and on.
Exactly. So you talk about reclaiming the self in motherhood. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I think that becoming a mom is such a huge identity shift. That role can be so large. I mean, I can't speak for dads, but I know as a mom, like the love and protectiveness that we have for our children is so sort of awesome that I think it can sometimes take over for a while, and mm-hmm. we leave parts of ourselves behind in service of this role. And so I think part of what I've found over time to be really important is how to reclaim parts of my identity that were there before children and integrate them in a new way to who I am now, instead of just like completely getting rid of them. Because at some point, those things come back and they're like, hey, this, you know, freedom of youth kind of wants some place to play, you know,
right, to thrive.
How can mm-hmm. you can't go back to being who you were or living a lifestyle that you used to have, but it is important to be all of who you are, I think, as a woman, and not be wholly defined as a mother, if that makes sense.
Right. Oh, no, absolutely. I completely agree. That's great, because I have a little one, but I have a teenager. So, and, you know, it goes fast. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I'm looking at, he's getting college letters and he's only a sophomore in high school. So I'm thinking one day I'm going to be back to, you know, just my husband and I in the house and, you know.
Yeah.
You have to be true to, you know, keep, like you said, keep that or rediscover that part of yourself that wants to play. So that's a great term. Thank you so much, Julia, for joining us. And your website is lessonsoflabor.com. Where else is the book available?
It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it can also be ordered through any local bookstore as well.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us on Mom Talk Radio, and best of luck. And when we come back... Thank you. And after this short break, we're joined by Tiffany Graves. It's the Spotlight on Moms. Stay with us. One of my favorite segments on Mom Talk Radio is talking to moms, everyday moms at the Spotlight on Moms. And we are speaking with Tiffany Graves today. Tiffany is the mom of a teen and a toddler, as we just said during the break, 13 and 2-year-old. And her Twitter handle is at TTownTiffany. And welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Tiffany.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm going to let you tell our listeners what kind of a busy, crazy life you have. Tell us what's going on with you.
Well, I think that crazy is probably an understatement for the way that my life tends to go.
Maybe chaos, right?
It is pure chaos all the time. I am an attorney. I'm in solo practice, so I run my own law firm. I've ran that for about 6 years now. And as you said, I also have a very active, very busy family. I have a 13-year-old and a 2-year-old, so I kind of have it coming at me from both ends mm-hmm. at home. So our life, a large part of our life consists of kind of trying to balance my work and my home life when both of those areas are very, very active.
Right. So you're a solo attorney?
Yes. Yeah.
I
have a manager that helps run my office for me, but
right,
I am the
right.
only attorney in my practice. Yes.
Wow. And what kind of law do you practice?
I do mainly family law and criminal, so a lot of divorce law, things like custody, things like that.
Right. And so how do you, because really it's the age disparity to me that stood out. So how do you, you know, you've got basically a toddler and a teenager. The teenager is either, it went probably 8th grade, 9th grade. So that's busy, because I have 2 teenagers and an 8-year-old. So the teenagers are busier than the 8-year-old. I didn't think that was ever going to happen. So how do you do it? What's some tips you have for us?
One of the things that we have found to be most important is just making sure that my husband and I communicate on everything and really plan out for our whole week, because we do have, you know, a 13-year-old who is involved in activities. She has things going on at school, and then we have, you know, a two-year-old on the complete different end of the spectrum who has his own activities that he's involved in. So we kind of feel like we're running around a lot, you know, trying to keep our heads on straight. So one thing that we have done is on Sundays, you know, after we get settled in the afternoon, that's kind of our planning afternoon for the week. We plan our meals for the week. We do meal prep. We get the kids' clothes ready. Just make sure that everything is planned out. And that has helped us so much. And we've tried to make it kind of a family activity, so we still feel like our planning time is time that we're spending together. So if we're planning our meals for the week, we make sure that our kids are, you know, helping us with age-appropriate parts of that to kind of still keep it family-oriented.
Right. That's a great idea. So Sunday afternoon is your planning session, basically, the family planning session.
Absolutely. We plan out our menu for the week. We prep, you know, any of the food that we can for the week and get it all packaged up so it's ready to go and make sure that the kids' clothes are all ironed and set out for the week, because there's nothing worse than trying to help a 13-year-old get ready in the morning while you have a 2-year-old screaming toddler trying to get your attention at the same time.
So do you blog or just tweet at T-Town Tiffany?
I just tweet. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So we can follow you there and follow your crazy adventures. Do you see anything changing within your practice where you might bring on somebody else, or do you you're good as a independent by yourself there?
It's something that I'm actually considering right now. We're looking at some new spaces to allow me the ability to bring someone else in, because my practice is certainly at the point where I would like to have an associate attorney in here. And, of course, I think that would make things easier with my family as well, because, you know, certainly my husband and I manage the best we can with it. But, I mean, it's challenging. I mean, as you probably know, I mean, anytime you have, you know, lots of different things going on, it's very challenging. No matter how well prepared you think you are, you know, things come up, you miss a deadline, you realize you have to have both kids, you know, in different places at the same time. So I think that would certainly help if I were able to bring someone else on.
Right. And I'm going to guess you bring the 2-year-old into, well, both children, but particularly the toddler into to work with you, because you can do that as your own boss, right?
Sometimes but I mean, you can't really take a 2-year-old into a courtroom, though.
That's true.
I've come close and almost had to.
What's that movie they did that? Somebody had to just bring the child in and just try to find somebody to watch while they had to run into a courtroom. I forget what movie. I'll have to think it up. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, Tiffany. Again, you tweet at T-Town Tiffany. Good luck. You've got a busy life and a full plate. So thank you so much for joining us on Mom Talk Radio. And if you have ever struggled with screen time for your children, for even yourself, we will be talking with Tally Orad, who is founder and CEO of an app called Screen. So stay with us to get the best tips about screen time.
Helping you succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
If you're like me, you struggle to control your kids' screen time. And sometimes I even think I probably need to limit my screen time. But in the case of parents, I'm pleased to introduce Tally Orad, who is the founder and CEO of Screen, which is an app. And she's going to tell us all about it. Tally is an entrepreneur, software engineer, and a mother of three. So welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about the app. We all struggle. I know I struggle with it. Any moms I talk to are just, you know, that's all the kids have in front of their faces. And if you tell them to get off one computer, they just pick up their phone and start watching YouTube videos. So why did you feel the need to create the solution to help parents manage the screen time?
So I'm like you, was a fed-up mom of three.
Right.
said, my kids were on the devices all the time. I saw the top of their heads versus having conversation with them. And with having my background, I was able to find a solution. Screen is a system that lets me manage all my kids' devices remotely. When they're doing, where they are, what they're doing, where they are, I can just turn it off if I need to.
Right.
Simple solution.
So you're saying it's like an on-off button, or, you know, an app that turns it on and off. Not necessarily, is it where you can read what they're texting back and forth, or no?
So Screen is not just an app. Screen is a system. It's a very simple. You purchase it on getscreen.com. You get a box. Once you get it, you download the app. Gives you ability to manage all the devices, not just one thing, not just their phones, not just the computers, also the television, their game consoles, everything they're on. Enables you to see what they are doing, how long they've been doing it. The second you set it up, you set the set of rules of what are the hours they're allowed, what devices are allowed, and then you also sign an agreement together, getting the kid to join in, to understand and learn why is it that they're doing it. And on top of that, when the devices are off, they see a screen with telling them what are the alternatives of activities, what else they can do at that time.
That's great. Because you know you're going to get the inevitable, I'm bored.
Right. And then they're staring at a blank screen, and what am I going to do right now? Here is what you're going to do. But this is something you came up with when you hooked up Screen. So you have a conversation with them. Together we're setting up the rules of, now I'm doing my homework, and for my homework I need my computer, and everything else is off. And on the other hand is, okay, when my device is off, I'm going to play with my friends outside, go ride a bike, or pull out the Lego and just play.
Right. Great. Well, that's fantastic. And actually, you know, my husband and I were just saying for our New Year's resolution, which is already, a month has already flown by, but our resolution is to do that, to get more control over, we have two teenagers, to get control over their phones. And because that's really where, I mean, we have to really just constantly tell them, put that down, you know, dinner table, but like we went out to eat the other night and they were both just 2 seconds, you give them to turn around and they're on their phone again, you know, so... It's very frustrating.
Right. So Screen basically, once you connect Screen, it helps you reconnect with your family. And it enables parents to communicate with their kids and kids to become kids, to do what they're supposed to be doing and not just being on the devices. All in moderation. It's okay to be on your devices as long as you're also doing something else.
Right. Just like you said, everything in moderation. And, you know, you made an interesting point, especially with my high schooler and my eighth grader. They have iPads. And anytime I tell them after school, you know, they take a little break and they do their homework and then they jump on a screen, they'll say, but I need it to do homework. So that's just, I guess, just some monitoring on our parts as parents, just to look over their shoulder and say, you're really not doing homework on your iPad. But because I was thinking I would go to the router and cut it off at the router and turn off my whole house. But then my Wi-Fi is gone for me and I need it to work. So
right.
That
but
work.
Another thing for me is I found with my kids is I can turn off the router. But on the other hand, they have local games that they can play on. And they can still watch the television. And if I want them to be off, I really want them to be off. I don't want them to go from one device to the other. I don't want that filler. And on the other hand, if one of the problems I had was my son was telling me I'm doing my homework, and then, as you said, I'm peeking behind their shoulders, seeing that he's doing Minecraft. Now, this is where I'm talking to you right now, and I can look at my household and see that my son is actually at school and he's not texting. And if it will be 4 p.m., I can see that he told me he's doing his homework. There is Word open, but on the other hand, on the main screen, he's actually playing Minecraft. So I can turn it off or give him a call and say, dude, this is unacceptable. You need to do your homework.
That's awesome. I am sold. I love it. I really did. I mean, we were looking through all these apps and there was one that, you know, there was what wasn't a really powerful, all-encompassing solution, but this sounds like it is. So I am totally sold at this point. I'm very, very impressed. So how long did it take you to develop this? Because it does sound very extensive.
It took us about a year to develop that.
Right. And where do we find it? Where listeners can find it? Where?
You can go to getscreen.com and just do pre-orders.
Right. Okay, wonderful. So you also had a very interesting background. You used to be a retired lieutenant from the Army Reserve Corps, which is an awesome background for you. So you're a software engineer, and thank you so much for joining us. Again, Tali Orad, who has developed Screen, and you can find information and get the information in the app at getscreen.com. And when we come back on Mom Talk Radio, we will be joined by Mary Bowley. Mary is the founder of Wellspring Living, and we'll be talking about human trafficking, a very serious topic. We'll be right back.
The number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
It's Mary in for Maria, and on this segment of Mom Talk Radio, we're going to talk about a very serious topic and one that we can all do something about. It's basically children at risk, human trafficking, and I'm pleased to introduce Mary Frances Bowley and Jennifer Franklin, who are co-authors of the book called Make It Zero, and makeitzero.net is the website to go to. And Mary, I'm going to ask you first. The statistics are just startling in the U.S., one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Tell us a little bit about the book, what's in it, and what was your inspiration?
Yeah. So for the last almost 15 years, we've worked with girls and women who we see have suffered the worst experience that a human could experience, which is trafficking. And after seeing girls at the end of the cycle, we just looked at the fact that there are so many overlapping issues that make a child vulnerable, and that if we're going to end trafficking, which so many people are talking about that now across our nation, then we've got to go back to what are those risk factors, and let's face the fact that in America, there are 16.4 million children who live in poverty. There are 16.2 million children in the United States, domestic children, who go to bed hungry at night. There are 13.2 million children who are either falling through the cracks of foster care or the education system, or maybe they're latchkey kids, or just not even seen, like the invisible children in the United States. We know that there'll be a million cases of abuse reported this year. We know that's a very unreported, low report,
underreported
number.
Right.
And so if that is the case in our country, I believe that Americans want to do something about that. And so how do we get over these startling statistics and move forward? And so the concept of the book is to tell some inspirational stories. And so Jennifer Franklin joined me and helped to interview a lot of people and tell their stories in a way that's incredibly hopeful, so that as the reader reads, oh, this happened, but I have hope because I see that this person is doing tremendous things to change it and turn those statistics towards zero, or this person overcame it. And if one
right.
can, many more can. And then,
right. So Jennifer, can you tell us what, so in the book, as Mary just described, it's stories, inspirational stories, and then what else is in the book in terms of what is there ways we can identify risk factors, what makes children vulnerable in the book? Is that in the book?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, the five sections are poverty, hunger, abuse, isolation, and trafficking. And the way that we wrap up each of those sections is to give the reader some tangible action steps to be involved in their own communities. Because I think that sometimes that's the disconnect. We watch a really inspiring documentary, and then we think, well, I'm fired up about this, but now what? And so I think the book, Make It Zero, really does connect the dots. And so we end every section with what one person can do. So if you're just an individual, you want to get involved and make a difference, you can do that. What more than one can do, so that could be a book club, a church group, an office group, that kind of thing. And then we have Teach One, which I think might be really applicable for your audience, because that's an empathy builder that you can do with a child or a teen in your own household. So,
right. That's great. And, you know, you're right. You see, hear great stories and inspirational stories of hope. And those are absolutely, you know, heartwarming. And you're so happy that somebody has come through something horrific. But what do we do if we don't experience it or we don't see it? I mean, what does your average listener do about it? So the fact that the book addresses that is really, really fantastic. And again, it's Make It Zero, which again, as Mary, you were saying, it's to make it zero percentage, zero numbers of children in vulnerable situations, correct?
That is so right. And the beautiful piece of this is as people choose to you know, almost see this as a social experiment. We believe that it will just become a catalyst for them to do more and more and more. And if we can really spread this message across our country, I do believe that we're going to see a change in the landscape of our country.
Right. And Jennifer, what's the subtitle of the book? Because that's a very compelling subtitle.
The subtitle is The Movement to Safeguard Every Child. So we really are anticipating this being a movement. Already social media is getting behind it with the hashtag Make It Zero. And people are sharing their own stories of activity in their own communities and even their own experiences with potentially, you know, growing up on food stamps and then how they've overcome that. So it's been really cool to find a community on social media. So we are trending already toward that movement to safeguard every child.
Wonderful. And Montauk Radio will do its part as well, because we can tweet. Maria's Montauk Radio account has about 50,000 followers, so we'll make sure to hashtag make it zero. And where do our listeners find the book and more information? You've got a well-built website, correct, Mary?
Yes, we do. MakeItZero.net is our website, and you can purchase the book on Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble, any bookstore that you want to get on Goodreads. You can purchase the book. We'd love to hear your feedback about it. You can even purchase it off of our website as well. And we would love to see, one of the things that Jennifer has done is created questions for book clubs. So it would be wonderful for moms.
Oh, great.
Are in a book club to adopt this as their next book to read and let the conversations begin, because as people begin to talk about this and their hearts begin to turn toward this, I think moms are the perfect place for this to grow organically across our country.
Absolutely. No better audience than Mom Talk Radio. So listeners out there, do them and the children a favor and check it out. Make it zero. And thank you so much, ladies, for joining us. Is there anything else on the horizon? Or is this basically what your baby right now that you're growing?
Jennifer. Yeah, this is kind of our
this
baby.
Is the
we're
baby.
Growing. Jennifer is quite the writer with a lot of different opportunities through magazines and newspaper. And so we're hoping that she's going to be able to share, you know, on that platform. And then we, as an organization, I head Wellspring Living. We work in the Atlanta area providing residential community-based services for girls and women. And so, of course, we want to begin to encourage other organizations to look at the issues in this mindset and actually possibly adopt some of these ideas to connect with their volunteers so that, again, we can all be working together collaboratively to make it zero.
That's wonderful. Well, blessings to you both. You're doing really wonderful work, and congratulations on the book. And we will definitely be looking it up, and we'll post it on Mom Talk Radio with the link to the website next week. Thanks so much, Mary and Jennifer, and that was MakeItZero.net. And when we come back, we're closing the show, our last segment, Debbie Slevin, who is the author of Unpregnant Pause, Where Are All the Babies? We'll talk to her after this short break. Mom Talk Radio, we're going to talk to Debbie Slevin. Debbie is a writer, producer, director, and teacher, and she's had many, many successful articles printed in national magazines and has written a play even. So welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Debbie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So your book is called Unpregnant Pause, Where Are All the Babies? So tell us a little bit about what that title means.
Well, Unpregnant Pause is the time in a woman's life just before menopause when she realizes that her fertility is waning and she starts to wonder, did she miss the window to become a mother? And I came to it from the perspective of wanting to be a grandmother. So did my daughter miss that window for making me a grandmother?
Oh, okay. Interesting. So did she?
Well, she's kind of hovering. She's at 35. Luckily, my son and his wife, who was 37, I believe, at the birth of my grandchild, you know, they gave me a grandchild. But what's funny on the whole journey is I've been with the book group we're probably together 17 years. And one night I looked around and said to them, I don't understand how this is possible. There are so many daughters. We were eight women with seven daughters,
all in their 30s, all capable, professional, attractive, lovely young women, and nobody was in a relationship. And
really?
A light went off, and I started to wonder, is this a trend or is this just happening by fluke to me and to my friends? And then the research began from there.
Okay. That's interesting, and you're right. I think, well, what we know, and actually Maria Bailey just wrote her latest eighth book called Millennial Moms, and the age of childbearing is bumping up higher and higher every year because of, I think it's because of careers, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think women want to make their mark. I think it's the Sheryl Sandberg lean-in phenomenon. That
right.
You spend those first 15 years leaning in, but
right.
If you are doing that, if you're leaning into your career, you're not leaning into a husband.
Correct. That's
you know,
true.
It's very, very hard to be 100% at both activities.
Right. So you wrote the book basically as an inspiration to be a grandmother from your children. So you actually mentioned the unforeseen cost of feminism. That's a very interesting statement. Can you expound on that?
Sure. I raised my daughter to be an empowered young woman. And I think along the way, as I was telling her, you should have any career you want, you should get the best education.
Right.
I don't think I ever stopped to say, but you know, motherhood is a really, really wonderful part of being a woman. And I think my generation in particular so embraced the excitement and the potential that feminism brought us with job opportunities and equal pay, it's the whole package.
Right.
That I think we a little bit turned our back on the fact that the woman is the one who carries the baby
mm-hmm.
and the joys of motherhood, because we also lived in a time that divorce was very high. It wasn't always so easy to be a mother. So we wanted our daughters to have these choices. But in the long run, now that we're aging and everyone's looking forward to seeing the next generation, there's a lot less of that generation.
Right. Right. You're right. And you know, and then it comes a point, especially with women, it is pretty finite when you're looking, like you said, at, you know, your late 40s and even late 30s, even now they can, you know, still high risk if you have, you know, over 35, if you start to think about having a baby. So very interesting. This book has got to be. And when did the book come out?
The book came out in November. And
so it's brand new. So
talking
awesome.
About it.
I'm sorry?
What's really funny is that even the men are talking about it because they're very interested in what their role is here. Because
yes.
I was not going to interview men, and I would say 3/4 into the writing, I stopped and said, wait, I need to hear from them.
There's another
and what
half.
I thought was so, yeah, there is. You're not doing this. Well, some people are doing it alone.
That's
but
true.
But for those who are not, when I started to ask them and say, well, what do you see your role in this whole thing, they all said, it was really pretty uniform, that they wanted their women to do whatever they wanted, to make good money, to be, you know, successful at their careers, but they still wanted to be the man at home.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So where can our listeners find your book, Unpregnant Pause?
At Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com.
And your website?
And my website is DebbieSlevin.com.
And it's S-L-E-V-I-N. Debbie is D-E-B-B-I-E.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations and best of luck with the book. I'm going to pick up a copy. It sounds great. So This wraps this episode of Mom Talk Radio. Maria will be back behind the mic next week. For this show and past shows, check out momtalkradio.com next week. And also check us out on Facebook. We listen and talk about all the guests and links to all the books and websites that we mentioned in this segment. Thank you so much. Have a great week, everybody, and happy Valentine's Day.